Roll.
Oh, yeah. So
Oh.
we've got Alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford here, Alder Nikki Conklin, Jennifer Campbell, Tiffany Malone, Megan Miller, Alder John Yugera is excused, Alder Angela, I'm sorry, Angela Jones is excused, and Matt Fair should be joining us later.
Fantastic. First order of business is approval of minutes from the June 6th meeting. Motion? Move approval, Dina Nina. Second from Alder Conklin. Any objections to the minutes? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
That's beautiful. It is passed. Oh, any opposed? It's passed unanimously. Next, we have public comments. We have no one registered for public comments. Move on to disclosures and recusals. Anybody need to make a disclosure or recusal? Seeing none, we'll move on. First order of real business is the public hearing on the 2025 to 2029 goals and objectives. We shall open the public hearing. There are no public members present, so we shall close the public hearing. Next up, review of the CDBG con plan survey results. Take it away.
Hi, everybody. My name is Maria Lola Martinez. The CDBG unit. I just wanted to provide some context on what we're doing. So, the consolidated plan is a plan that's required by HUD for our unit to do as a response to receiving federal funding. So, that includes a lot of the money that we put towards housing, neighborhood centers, business and and so it's a very important plan. It really outlines our funds and prioritizing our funding for the next 5 years, starting with 2025 going up to 2029. So that's really what this is about. And one thing that we have to do as part of that is get citizen participation, and that involves one of the ways is a survey and other things, such as other focus groups that we've done, including other reports that we really involve the community in. And so this is just one way that we're getting information back to the public to really inform how we're using the money that government. And then secondly, this also helps us fill in the gaps of like where the other money we get, state, local,
So that one should be published for the public hearing of 5 minutes. So the survey just recently. So this was our opportunity to just quickly get all of the data and look at the survey to present you guys information. So next steps is as Murray said, we continue to go to the other focus groups, we continue to ask questions, we continue to look at this data as well. The biggest thing about doing all of this free work is trying to capture the information of do we continue funding as we have, or do we make changes? We usually are out in the community, and it's usually don't hear too much from the community about, like, please fund something else in all of the categories. Unfortunately, it's usually fund more, fund more. So just in context, that's what usually we are hearing. There is one area, though, when we bring the plan back to you, that I do want to have a good conversation about, and that is with our CDBG funds. So previously, we used our CDBG funds to fund public service, and we focused back on neighborhood centers. And that gave us the opportunity within our action plans and within the comp plan to say that CDBG was funding a variety of things, housing, economic development, and neighborhood support. This also gave us some comfort to neighborhood centers as we sometimes went into budget cuts and those kinds of things to kind of talk about they have the support of city level and federal. And so it's kind of, we have those two different funding sources. The neighborhood centers are operated out of a different, that's out of community
resources. And so one of the things that the manager of community resources and I have been discussing, and this is all still preliminary, but it's a question that we're going to bring back, is do we swap out city levy that is going to neighborhood centers, or sorry, that is going to homeless services for putting CDBG, public service dollars, in homeless services, and then put all city levy into the centers. So where this would impact our conflict and our action plans, because then we'd be saying our public service and CDBG is just in housing services. We would not be talking about neighborhood support anymore. So again, don't have that wide variety of CDBG. How do we want to look? It was my staff. I receive those federal programs, and so I'm kind of having to manage my unit with also support of this other unit, and having to make sure they're following these federal guidelines as well. So it's something on the table, not to be discussed, but I wanted to, that's like one of the big questions that is really, you guys are rubber stamping almost the same thing every year. However, I think that is worth a discussion. When we bring it to talk about where those public service dollars go. So we're not talking about decreasing anything, but it's more like the choice mix.
Do a very quick outline of the divisions and the overarching division.
Yeah. So Community Development Division, which is directed by Julia. So we used to say that we had four units.
Mm-hmm.
So we have my unit, which is called the CDBG unit, the big unit that receives the federal funds, owned ESG, CDBG. But now we also get city levy, and we get our capital, affordable housing funds, and so forth. We have the Community Resources Unit. Yolanda Shelton Morris manages that unit. They focus a lot on our career development and economic development, such as youth and adults, employment programming, crisis intervention, and then the neighborhood centers operations, and then like youth programming. We used to say the senior center was a separate unit. We had another manager, but because older adult services is a service that Yolanda manages already, actually moved the senior center into the community resources. So it is kind of an entity that's supported under the Yolanda's unit now. And then we have the child care unit. So that's Monty Marsh. And that unit focuses on making sure our child care centers are accredited in the city of Madison, so providing them technical support. And then we have a small program for tuition assistance as well. Individuals that can't get assistance through the state program could possibly get money through the city to help this child. So across the board, those are the units. And then again, most of the housing stuff and the neighborhood assets, such as like the capital projects, are in my unit. And then a lot of the purchase of service, crisis, employment.
Thanks.
Oh, I have a question. So what we're seeing here, what we're seeing here is from the research that people have gone out and received from neighborhood resource teams can we declare on that? I'm sorry.
This is just this such a survey mm-hmm. out to individuals. This does not include the focus groups yet.
Okay, so this is just random. Do we know who the targeted ones, who the demographic was, any of that? Oh,
it's
okay.
This is just the preliminary information we'll use to support what we write into the content.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kaylee. I'm a grad student at UW-Madison in the Urban and Regional Planning Program. And I'm an intern this summer and through fall in the CDBG unit. And like Lynette was saying, I'm helping out with the consolidated plan. So this is just kind of a general overview of the survey results. This doesn't cover all of the questions that were covered, but in the minutes was the full data set if you guys are interested in referring to that. So just kind of a general overview, there were 1,059 total respondents, and that includes residents in the city of Madison and the greater Dane County area. And that's a huge improvement from the last survey, which had 511 total respondents. The survey and the flyers were available in four different languages, so English, Chinese, Hmong, Spanish. And the survey had 36 questions. There were two different versions of the survey that were taken. One was for residents and one was for community providers. And yep, all of the respondents are residents of Dane County. We worked with the city's community connectors to share information with Latinx, Chinese, and Hmong residents. And then in terms of distribution and promotion, it was sent to 28 plus groups and listservs who received the information and passed it along to their connections. One news interview was done, one city blog. It was posted on social media for DPCED. There was a press release. It was posted on the CDD webpage and then two Spanish radio shows. And then, so our agenda today, I'm going to go over the demographic results. And then cover each section of the survey, which was housing, neighborhood centers, and community facilities, and then business and economic development. And then we'll go over some closing comments. So the data that I'll be talking about just covers the city of Madison. And then this is our flyer that was sent out. And you can see there's a QR code. So people could scan, take it on their phone, or they could do it on the computer as well. All right. And demographics. So first one is age. There was no youth input reported from the city of Madison. So zero identified as 18 or less. Ages 27 to 54 had the greatest participation with 55 or older second, and then 19 to 26 third. And then race and ethnicity. So respondents could choose multiple options, so there might be some overlap in some of the reporting here. But white or European descent made up over half the share of respondents, 63%. And the next three largest populations were Chicano, Latino, and Hispanic, Southeast Asian, and Black or African descent. And if you need me to slow down at all, just let me know. okay, gender. Majority of respondents are women, and males were the second largest population, followed by non-binary and genderqueer. Household size, so two-person households were the most common living situation, followed by one- and three-person households, and then households of five or greater were not as commonly reported. Language. Majority of respondents took the survey in English, with Chinese second most reported, Spanish, and then Hmong. Annual household income. So annual household income of $100,001 to $150,000 was most common, with $50,001 to $75,000. As second most, and then there was strong representation overall from a range of incomes. And roles in the community. So most respondents said that they were a resident, 73%. 14% said they were nonprofit or other community service providers. There was no local government staff, committee member, or public official reported. But when we went and like looked through, there were people who fell under that category, but they usually identified themselves as a resident or a community leader. So they are included in this. Funding priorities. So everyone was asked to rank each category: housing, community and social services, public infrastructure, neighborhood center and community facilities, and business and economic development. So they were asked to rank each of those categories, one through five, in order of importance. So this chart just shows which of these categories was ranked number one most commonly. And you can see housing was ranked number one among community and partners and residents with 70 and 74%. So that was pretty significant. Residents, their second and third most common were public infrastructure and community and social services. And then for our community partners, the second and third were community and social services and business and economic development.
Could you give like little descriptions of what you meant by the terms?
Yeah, I go over that, I think, in a couple more slides. Yeah. Okay, housing, resident living situation. So homeowners made up 60%, with renters as the second most reported living situation. For those who selected other, they said housing cooperative, living with a family member, or senior housing. Housing affordability. So everyone was asked, do you consider your current housing to be affordable to you? 60% said yes, 40% said no. And then they were asked to report what their reasons for housing unaffordability are, or if their housing is affordable. So although most said that their housing is affordable, it's important to note that 202 respondents make an annual income of 100,001 or greater, like we saw in figure six. So that's just something to keep in mind. Among reasons for unaffordable housing, people reported increases in cost of living, property taxes, and rent most frequently. And then everyone was asked where they live in Dane County, whether or not they live in their preferred location, and then they were asked about what their barriers are to living in their preferred location. So most said that they are living in their preferred location of those who live in the city of Madison. But for those who do not live in their preferred location, their top three barriers were housing that is available is unaffordable. It's too competitive to find a place to live, or poor conditions of housing. But of those who live outside of the city of Madison, 21% of them said they would prefer to live in the city. Okay. Neighborhood centers and community facilities. So for this question, everyone was asked to select three programs and services that were most important to invest in to them. This shows which categories were selected most often. So the top three programs and services were access to services available to the center. So food pantry, essentials pantry, computer lab, phone, things like that. Number two was after school and summer programming for children and youth. And number three was information and referral services, like connecting individuals and families to service providers, like housing and crisis intervention and prevention. Community development priorities. So everyone was asked to select one activity that is related to community development, leadership, and engagement that is most necessary. So the top three priorities were, the first one tied together were maintain staffing and support of services in neighborhood centers. So this is like remodeling or expanding existing centers. And then improving public infrastructure, streets, curbs, sewer, storm systems. Number two, support community leaders and organizations to engage with neighbors, build community, and understand processes. And number three, improve existing neighborhood centers and nonprofit facilities.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
So the answer about improving public infrastructure, was that sort of balance? So it seems like all the others are neighborhood center folks, and that it's more all the other kind of services. Was there a reason for that?
Yeah. Is anyone?
It just seems like it stands out. Like all the questions are more about, well, community gardens, I guess, is on them. Otherwise, they're more community organization, community services, community centers. And then public infrastructure.
So the survey was developed with Dane County, and so there is a wide variety of what we can
actually use some of the J funds for. Mm-hmm. CDBG funds can be used for public infrastructure. So what our engineering department does could be tapping into CDBG. We typically don't put that in our consolidated plan because we're usually focusing more on community resource services and what community development division does. But in developing these questions with Dane County, we want one survey to go out. Mm-hmm. They wanted to have more broad questions. So going back though, I just want to take a pause mm-hmm. to the question on what did you mean by each of mm-hmm. these. In the survey, there was examples for the residents. So Katie can go through and give a little example when the resident was picking between housing or infrastructure, what the example was, so that person could resonate yes. with deciding.
Yeah.
So housing, the example is build more affordable housing, provide services to access housing. Neighborhood center and community facilities was improvements to neighborhood centers, community building, services offered at neighborhood centers. Community and social services were, for example, child care, violence and crisis prevention programs, basic needs, services. Business and economic development was access to capital for small business owners, technical assistance to support businesses, and business mentorship programs. The last one, public infrastructure, was improvement of streets, water and sewer systems, neighborhood parks, and accessibility to public spaces.
So I will say, so we do sometimes fund those activities in very, very small mm-hmm. pieces when it comes to neighborhood plans. Mm-hmm. That's about the only time that we see our CDBG funds going to that is if, because whenever there's a neighborhood plan that's in a CDBG targeted area, we usually allocate a small portion, up to $200,000, that can go to a capital project. So sometimes we might see like lights, light streetlight improvements, a bike path improvement, very, very small dollars usually, and again, focused on the neighborhood plan versus we have seen other communities use their CDBG for projects.
So does the county mainly do what we do, or do they do anything? I feel like they must see how
they do. Yeah, they are very, very similar to what we do.
Mm-hmm. Interesting that the residents said like zero business and economic development, and the organizations were like, no, give it. Like, who are you giving it to then? Like,
all right, and business and economic development. So, similar to one of the previous questions, they were asked to rank each of these categories 1 through 5 in order of funding importance. So, these are the most commonly ranked number 1. Number 1 was assist established business owners from historically marginalized communities in purchasing commercial property for their business. Number 2 is financial assistance and technical assistance around the creation of business cooperatives. And then 3 was support business incubator organizations. All right. And workforce development funding needs. They had to select 3 programs and services that were most important to them to invest in. So access to childcare options to attend job training and education, paid job training to individuals facing barriers to employment, and transportation subsidies to travel to and from employment. All right, and then the last question was open-ended, so they were able to leave any other comments or feedback that they wanted to add on. So I just picked a few of the statements that kind of matched the themes of what we saw. So housing and childcare are the 2 greatest issues that need to be addressed. Please continue to fund services for individuals and families struggling with the effects of trauma. Continue programs for low-income families to receive grants or loans as first-time home buyers. Housing costs are very high, rent has increased while wages stay stagnant, and then equitable services for older adults. Yeah, that's all I have for you.
So thank you. So we appreciate about the survey is it kind of gives us a good glimpse from the resident perspective of like, are we on the right track? And also though, where are we missing feedback? So as you can see, we did not get any youth
feedback. So staff are currently now working with some community organizations that focus on supporting youth to see where we can already get to established meetings to start asking more face-to-face focus group type questions. Maybe the survey just didn't resonate to get some of that feedback. We're also trying to connect with our economic development department and the Black Chamber to see where we can kind of maybe get more feedback in that kind of space as well. So this is kind of like our first glance, and we're engaged now, spending our time going out ourselves and following up and talking and so forth.
Questions?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I had just a couple questions.
That seat's getting to your head.
So was the survey, was it a multiple choice or was it like a scale? How would you present it?
Yeah, some questions were multiple choice, like one answer, but some were more like the ranking or top three. They had to pick multiple choices. So,
and then was there any stipends offered for this?
I don't think so, no.
And then, because I was just wondering, when did this come out? Because I never saw this, you know, and then when you said, like, there was no elected officials or anything, I'm like, when did this come out, or was this given to us? But I didn't see it, so I was just wondering when this happened.
It came out June 1st and July 9th.
It just ended. We just, whoa.
Yeah.
So the results quick.
May 1st.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah,
that's good. Never mind.
June 9th. Okay.
That's a good result. But...
sent it to... I can share the whole list, actually.
You don't have to do that, but I was just wondering, like, how we could have maybe helped, you know, put it on our blogs or anything, because, you know, like, I would have loved to help with the process. That's all. So I'm just like, if we had
I think we sent it through Liz, who I think now kind of creates like that big master blog for you guys,
mm-hmm.
right? That things maybe
but maybe the point is, it would be nice if the committee members got stuff like this too, and we could share it out.
And this has been my hubbub from this whole time, but like, you know, our emails, we get a lot of different emails from different people, we never know who's who. So if we could come up with a system, I'm saying this for everybody, if we could come up with a system, like, you know, everything is marked urgent from the city, or everything is flagged a different color or something for us to draw attention to it, just so we know it's from the city.
All emails from
can you just text
thanks
us?
A lot.
I know, I totally hear what you're saying, because you're absolutely right. We kind of just have our normal, like, one person,
mm-hmm.
and we think that, oh, it's going to get wherever it needs to go. But so I hear what you're saying. So we will have more opportunities too, because this is just to get the kind of initial, like, hey, give us some feedback. We now have to collect all of this data and write our consolidated plan. Once we write our consolidated plan, that is the next time we will all be together, maybe in this room. But that is our next in-person meeting, where we again have a public hearing. And the point of that is, then we say, okay, we heard from you back in May. This is what we are now going to do with our funds. Are you okay with this or not? And so maybe that is like the next opportunity that we can kind of do that more even robust. Is this, you know, this is what we heard. Do you guys all think that this is good or not?
Because right now I can't agree with this. You know what I'm saying? The data that we're getting, like you said, 63% white, and their income is $100,000 to $150,000. Like, that's not realistic for the people who live in Madison, Wisconsin. So I love the start of it, but we need to really target those areas that people who are using these neighborhood centers. Are we getting to those people that are actually using the neighborhood centers? Like, those are the people that we need to be robustly reaching out to, I feel like, if we want to know how we should spend this money. We should go to the people who are already kind of using it, not like, oh, this is what I think would be good. Like, I want to go to the people who are using it already. So, but it's a great start. I love it though. Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
Nothing? Not high level thinking today.
I did think it was interesting that the proportion of homeowners was larger than renters, and that's not my understanding of the demographics of the city. Is that accurate? So it shows that there's a maybe a skewing of older, comfortable white folks sitting in their houses that they own, doing surveys.
Checking their emails and not emails.
Oh, I missed this from yesterday. Is it refreshing? Is it refreshing?
Oh, sorry.
Other.
That wasn't specific. I'm a comedian. I'm so
you
sorry.
Are, you're good.
For everybody listening.
You'll be playing it back later. Okay. What's that? Staff report?
Real need somebody. just three quick things. Thing one, I have to believe you've all heard that happened during the holidays, so maybe not. That last week, the Common Council moved a resolution that selected a construction contractor to build the next shelter that we employed for a long time. It required the infusion of about another $2 million. Which we were able to do without forcing the city to borrow additional funds. Actually, about a $27 million total price tag, about $8 million of which will be city borrowing. Most of the rest of it went from LG funds and from federal funds. So,
and that just covers the construction.
That covers the construction. Construction is expected to begin within the next month. And anticipated to be completed by the end of 2025. So late 25 or early 26, we hope to be into that facility. Thing number two, one of the affordable housing development proposals to which this committee and the council had approved affordable housing funding, it being the University Park Commons 2 project, the next phase of the Westgate redevelopment. That developer turned back the $2.1 million that we had offered in favor of a smaller TIF loan. And the primary rationale for that decision was the developer's reluctance to apply the tenant selection criteria that we had allowed. RFP process. This was the only developer that pushed back. We didn't think it appropriate to relieve him from those requirements, given that other developers have agreed to abide by them and was not able to demonstrate any tangible reason for that. But it was kind of an amicable pardon. And I think that we will see this developer again. I think with the experience that we get with other developments and other developers with those tenant selection criteria, we may be able to get back on board. But turn this one back. So we've got a little over $2 billion that we didn't think that we would have that's available to us. We'll use it as we see it appropriate, see it through our approval. And thing two,
I just interject that I'm really pleased that y'all held the ground on that.
1,000,000%.
Yeah.
I think had we been more inclined to change course, we could probably would have done that with your involvement. I don't think we would have done that. There wasn't, we didn't think sufficient justification left even to bring it back.
So is that project just over with that order? Okay.
That project will proceed, and it will proceed exactly like it was going to with our funding in terms of it will be affordable. The tenants mix will be the same as the development we approved funding for, because it had been previously awarded tax credits. And so this developer was able to secure other cost financing and was able to get some TIF financing to make up for what we were making available and chose to go back out.
Okay.
And the last thing I'll say on that is that this sort of presents a little bit of a dilemma. Now, the TIF financing was much, much smaller than what has been offered the Affordable Housing Fund. But we've identified the need to sort of close the differences between the terms and conditions under which we make money available through the Affordable Housing Fund and the terms and conditions through which the city makes money available through tax and financing. So today, for this project, our tenant selection criteria will not apply to that TIF loan. It won't be held to those standards, but in the future, we are now beginning conversations with our colleagues in the Economic Development Division to narrow those differences. I'm hoping to get to a point where the terms and conditions that we provide funding under which TIF financing is made available look very much the same.
And that could be part of the larger, they're looking at overall the review of TIF policy. So this is a project that will be multiple months of review.
So there's going to be a comprehensive TIF policy review?
Yes. With a particular focus on its use in support of affordable housing.
I'm sorry.
No, please.
This makes a lot of sense, because as you were talking about that before you clarified, I was thinking, like, if you think of the common person and they'd be like, wait, city money, and there are these different criteria as well.
Right.
I mean, I get why it was different, you know, the history of the two different programs. But, yeah.
And so can I just follow up the last thing? So I just want to be clear. So the project is still going forward, but we saved $2 billion in our affordable housing fund. We still have that money, and they're using the other city framework.
It'll be the same project.
Okay, gotcha.
So
thing three, I wanted to make you all aware of the budget direction under which we're currently operating from the mayor. You're all aware of the budget deficit.
It's fine.
My property taxes are going up.
Right.
We're facing as a city of $22 million.
Funded under the couch.
And I don't want to get ahead of the council, but I think there's a very strong likelihood that the council is going to go to the voters and ask for their approval to exceed the state levy limits and raise more money through the property tax than what state. Like the city allows without voter approval. That referendum won't go to the voters until just a week or two before the budget has to be adopted. So what that means is that we're going to have to develop two different budget scenarios. One assuming that a referendum passes and the city's authorized to increase what it raises in taxes, and the other assuming that the referendum does not pass. So to prepare for the scenario under which a referendum might not pass, mayor has instructed each agency to develop recommendations that would reflect a 5% spending reduction from the current year. That translates for the Community Development Division to about $800,000. And so we are in the process now of evaluating our budget and where we spend our money, and looking for something $1,000 in spending cuts. In years past, when agencies have been asked to identify cuts, community development has been given a pass. That's not going to happen this time around. That same request to identify that kind of spending reduction. So we're going to look for opportunities within our budget where you can pair spending that will have minimal impact on those that we serve. There are a couple of obvious examples of that, but there are also going to be some difficult decisions that we'll need to make. And I think it's made more difficult for the Community Development Division in that we know that in 2026 we have a significant budget challenge facing us in the form of operating subsidy for the and shelter. So there are reductions in spending that we could identify in 2025 that I think we would have preferred to salt away and keep those dollars available for use for the shelter in 2026. That will be part of the conversation that we have with the mayor about how to handle that.
Could you use part of the $2.1 million you just got back?
It's our capital
budget. Two budgets.
Yay.
Great. Questions for Jill?
What is the dollar amount?
It's just shy of 800.
Just write him a check. The referendum is going to the November election or spring election?
But August 6th, Common Council, that's where they're supposed to vote. They could go on the ballot and then it would be on the ballot.
Are you, I guess the question for the others, are you discussing, is there like a committee to hold or something maybe next week?
They haven't told
us. I saw something.
Or a discussion on the agenda about it? Or is that discussion going to happen in April 6th or August?
So
they've had some.
Yeah.
Every council, we have a presentation of something before.
Right, but. Yeah.
Okay. So where it's been on the top of my brain for months.
Mm-hmm.
To add to the drama, also I've seen this, the school district.
Yes.
Yes.
The school district is also expected to go to referendum back in the day. To go to referendum to a much larger degree than the city. And I think they projected that if those, there's a capital budget and an operating budget request that the school district will make, if both are approved, the increase on the average value home in the city will rise by some $1,300. So it's a pretty big deal. And though ours will be much smaller, others are going to have to requests in front of them. I think that makes things a little bit more interesting. Interesting.
That's an
awesome. You're like, if you're a renter, you're Would you vote for it and increase your future potential property tax if you become a homeowner? Or do you not have that foresight?
I mean, the truth
you
about it
through,
is it all
through
impacts
rents, right?
It all impacts
yeah.
rents.
That's right.
That's
right.
Preemptively, I'm afraid.
The developer's not going to take that hit. What was I thinking?
Oof.
All right. The last one, the RFP for non-tax credit developments closed. So staff are still kind of going through those applications, doing kind of are they eligible to proceed, supplemental questions. My question, though, is who would like the applications printed and we will mail them to you rather than email? And I know that some get lost in email or it gets
I want them to.
Just so I know.
I think I want paper too.
You want paper too?
Did the developer who just gave back money apply again? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't apply. Good.
The RP that just closed was for non-tax credits.
Oh, that's right.
That development is able to go forward.
Yes.
The same income structure is either going to work in tax credits.
Okay. Tax credits comes in a few months.
So that RFP was just released.
Thing 23.
So those will be due August 30th.
Ish.
Yeah. Usually I'm out for a month. But no, actually beginning August. I think
August 3rd is the beginning of
That RFP kind of sum out. For all that RFP and switch to our RFP, all developers have created meetings with city staff. So staff have already started meeting with everybody to go over the requirements. We did a workshop just on Wednesday that highlighted again the importance of one, make sure you get your application submitted by the deadline. We will not accept late applications, even if it is 15 minutes late. We emphasize the tenant selection standards, went into a lot of detail of this is not negotiable. And then we spent some time in this workshop focusing even more on the importance of the service provider and the property management and developer's relationship. And making sure that when we say that we are targeting people experiencing homelessness, that they are working with that service provider on proper case management that's needed. A lot of times, as we've now seen these developments come to us in the funding stages and they come to you, it's all great that they're around the table. During construction phase, everyone kind of gets busy and goes their merry ways. And then at least of time, they're building those relationships back again. And that's too late. Mm-hmm. So we want them to stay engaged throughout that whole process. And that's really important. So we want good partnerships. Mm-hmm. So we emphasize that.
I might have missed it if you already said it again, but it is August 1st.
It is August 1st. And then we go through that process.
Questions, comments? Great. Lovely to see everyone in person. Take a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Nina, we're out. 6:22.
Stop recording, please.